Welcome back to the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 929 The Game. Triple in for Tiffany. Falcons getting ready for Tampa Bay Thursday night here. 8:15 kickoff right here on Sports Radio 929 The Game. We're going to be talking with David Archer, Falcons color analyst, coming up at 8:20. But Mike, Squid, what can this offense do to get on track? It's just kind of sputtering about, trying to figure things out, frustrating to watch due to a myriad of reasons.
I got three simple fixes for Falcons offense. A, win on first down.
Yep.
They're not doing it enough. They're not getting enough positive plays on first down. B, be better on third down. And it goes hand in hand with one or B or A or B or whatever you want to call it. Because if you have positive, that's why the Saints were so good at moving the ball and running, able to run the ball so effectively. They were getting such good gains on first down. And the other one is stop shooting yourself in the foot. Mistimed, ill-timed, however you want to phrase it, penalties on this offense. You have a touchdown to Bijan Robinson, a screen where you open it up perfect and Bijan works his magic that only he can, the way he has the vision and the speed and his agility, and you score, and then it comes back for what I thought was a BS ticky-tack penalty.
Yep.
But the reality of the situation is these ill-timed penalties are killing this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easier said than done. I don't think there's a team in America that doesn't want to be better on third down or have more success when it comes to first and second down. The question is, how do you do it? And I think a great kind of blueprint to kind of showcase how you could possibly do that is to look exactly what Clint Kubiak and New Orleans are doing. The amount of eye candy and the amount of times you can freeze linebackers and guys on the edge and everything else. They utilize at an incredible level. I mean, you put Taysom Hill at quarterback and use different options, right, to be able to have some imagination in terms of what you do. We are so freaking vanilla to the point where the only run plays we ran were wide zone and a couple of inside zones. That is it. We don't have gap schemes. We don't pull guards to the outside, to the inside, across the formation. We don't do any of it. And you look at the Saints, and they do all of it, it seems like, at a high level with their offensive line. That's how you keep defenses off balance. So to add to Squid's points, how do you do it? He says, you're better on first and second down, better on third down. Yeah, I think you have to do it with more imagination in your play calling and your schemes and in order to put your guys in the best possible situation.
Well, they need to man up like we need to man up.
Why am I the only one with a voice in there about saying I was wrong?
Well, you're the only one that has to really man up in a rough way.
Not really. I went 2-2. I mean, I was 500.
That's all right.
I mean, I didn't lose
we'll
you no money.
Happens. We'll see what happens.
Well, what was your bad one?
My bad one is not even a bad pick. It was just a bad beat. Vegas lost to an inept Carolina team the 2 weeks before. Some say it's a different team. Some say it's a good team. I don't know. All I know is Vegas looked a lot better when they played the Ravens. I am confused and baffled at the fact that they're a 2-point favorite. However, the thing that confuses me more is the fact that this over-under is at 36.5. I go with the over. It's going to be something around 24-20. There's going to be 40 points scored at least. Take the over in the Vegas Browns game in Vegas.
Wow.
Take the over, baby.
Wow.
It's 36.5. Tell them Squid Billy sent you.
Close, but no cigar.
I mean, I was literally one, what? I was very close.
Yeah, you were really, really close.
Half a point, and that's because another BS penalty pulled off that touchdown for the. And I don't know.
You said you went 2-2. What was your loss?
That one.
I think I know.
I lost the Georgia game.
Yeah.
Because I thought Kirby Smart was going to have a game plan and not show up empty handed. Kind of like
rough.
His team left.
I disagree, but nonetheless, my bad one, because I went 3-1, and it was an unfortunate bad one, because really, there's an interception at the end of the game. I had the Auburn-Oklahoma game, the under, and let's talk about it. I'm actually just going to go with the under in this one. I've got it at 45 right now. I think Oklahoma's defense under Brent Venables is next level. I don't think Auburn's offense can really hold up in that situation, but Oklahoma's offense is not very good either. They had to make a switch at quarterback. There's a lot of other questions about that. Give me the under in Auburn-Oklahoma under 45. That is going to be a good one. Let me tell you.
That's the wrong number.
Let me just tell you guys how comfortable I felt about this one. Oklahoma scored 17 points in the fourth quarter to win this game, and the last touchdown was on an interception return with 4 minutes left.
Hey,
should have hit it, did not.
Poor Auburn, poor Peyton Thorne. I mean, he's benched for interceptions, comes in, they're winning the game, He's just got to protect the ball and throws a pick six to lose it.
Yeah, Auburn 338 passing yards. Hats off to him.
Well, I know this boy named Rob Tribble. I wish I could go back and talk to him on Friday. Talk some sense into him. 19th-ranked Illinois, the Fighting Illini at the Fighting Mike Contis of Penn State. Illinois with the upset. Illinois wins this one 30-27.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
You really bought into the Brett Bielema juice, didn't you?
And Mike was with me, too.
You with me.
Oh,
Brett
man.
Brett Bielema, I'm going to tell you something. I remember the Brett Bielema that we knew at Wisconsin, you know, the guy that would, from what I've heard, would pony up to the bar after a game.
Dude.
And would hang out with whoever would. Boy, he goes to Vegas, meets his wife, and now he looks like three of a Brett Bielema from Wisconsin.
I got to tell you, I love the first part of that story before we get to the good ones. I went to a coaching clinic in San Antonio like 2 years ago when I was coaching high school ball. And I get in the airport. I think I was in Houston for my connection. And I walk, and I'm trying to find a bar and a beer. And I walk into an empty bar, only one man sitting in this bar in this airport in Houston. It was Brett Bielema. I was like, yes! Yes!
What's up, coach?
Oh, man, he had a couple of guys that sat around him and started talking to him. I was like, I'm not going to bother him, but I just love the fact that I have this visual for the rest of my life of Brett Bielema sitting there with a cold beer in the Houston airport, man. Yeah, good for him.
I mean, it's his stories at Wisconsin are legendary.
All right, we've torn ourselves down. Now let's build ourselves up. What was your good one there, Mike?
I went with San Fran at New England. Let's hear what I had to say. 49ers are 10-point favorites on the road against New England. I'm going with San Francisco.
Oh.
Why on earth is San Francisco a 10-point favorite? Because they're that much better than New England is. Look at New England's offense. Inept. Just could not do anything last week. I'm going to go San Francisco to cover that 10 right there. I think they win by a couple of touchdowns, if not more. I think this is a lopsided game.
Come on, man. That's too easy.
It is. It is too easy. San Fran wins by, I think, 20 points, maybe 17. I think there was a last-minute field goal for New England. Yeah, the final's 30-13. So there you go, man. Felt good about San Fran. They're just so much better. New England is terrible right now. Terrible.
Yeah, I think they're about to make that old switch. I think Jacoby Brissett's starting quarterback era in New England is kind of run out. Look, my good was me basically telling you that I know more than Mike. I have no clue why this game is even. None. I'm baffled. I know that Oklahoma's starting a new quarterback, but they are a better roster, and I think they're better coached right now than Auburn. I'm going to pick Oklahoma straight up in this game.
This mother don't miss.
No, he's good.
That mother don't miss, man.
You're right, Snoop Dogg. I don't miss.
You got so freaking lucky.
I told you the better team would win.
I mean, dude, there's literally videos of Auburn fans rolling Toomer's corner with 4 minutes left, and they get the pick six for Oklahoma. Oklahoma got the crap beat out of them in this game and somehow won. I still don't know how they won this game.
Can I tell you real quick? So I was out Saturday having beers with this guy used to play offensive line in the NFL, and we had to stop by Kroger on the way home, Amy and I. And so I get home, and then we go over to the neighbor's house to watch the Alabama game, and I go downstairs to eat by myself. It's downstairs. I'm just sitting there by myself eating, and he's got all the four screens up, and I see the pick six, and I'm like, yes! Go! Go! Yes! I'm so pumped.
Oh, man.
Rob, what was your good?
Well, let's hear it. 111th meeting between the Falcons and Saints. Both teams have won 55. Taysom Hill is playing. He might do something to annoy the fan base and strike fear in our hearts. Falcons, emotional victory.
Let's go.
Over the Saints. They're going to win this one 23-21.
Woo!
And the tubas will be quieted. The Houdat Nation tubas. And we're going to celebrate. Come by the Signia by Hilton and buy me a shot.
The snap spot. Kick from Koo is away. And it is good! 58 and the money shot for Youngway Koo.
Koo! The money
shot. Not the money shot.
I mean.
Yes!
They have the booth cam set up.
Uh-huh.
And the video's out. Wes might have dropped the money shot and was excited, but I couldn't sit down for it. The cams caught Art and me both fist pumping. We're pumped.
As you should, man. As you should.
That's good stuff, man. Nice work. Nice work, everybody.
Well,
nice
David work. Archer had a pretty fun, exhilarating work weekend. He did the call for Alabama, Georgia, and got to witness that Falcons victory yesterday. We're going to discuss both of those things with him and dissect this Falcons victory as they get ready to host the 3-1 Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Thursday night, 8:15 kickoff at home, right here, Sports Radio 929 The Game. Welcome back to the Morning Shift. Triple in for Tiffany this hour, brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Let's go out and talk to Falcons analyst, former Falcons quarterback, David Archer. Arch, you had a pretty exhilarating broadcasting weekend. You were in Tuscaloosa for the instant classic that was Georgia-Alabama, and of course the victory yesterday, warts and all, Falcons over the Saints. Tell me about Saturday.
Yeah, it was an incredible scene, Rob, over there. Bryant-Denny Stadium, as you can imagine, is a pretty good place to go do a game anyway, but with Georgia in town and the Georgia fans that were able to find tickets to get in there, it just made it an unbelievable theater. These stadiums that are in the SEC are essentially cathedrals to college football, and it was an unbelievable scene. It's fun to be a part of those kind of scenarios. And then what played out on Saturday night with what looked like was going to be a total devastation, destruction job by Alabama, and then Georgia, for them to be able to flip the script and come back, it just, like you said, instant classic. I think you could see these two teams play each other two more times.
Arch, while we're on that, let's follow up with a look like the tale of two halves, obviously, for Carson Beck. As I thought after the second possession where the audibles to Arian, the screenplay, and Arian Smith doesn't get the call, he looked shook for a little bit, and then the second half comes out, and I thought he played really well in the second half. And then Jalen Milroe just looked like the best quarterback in college football on Saturday night.
Well, Jalen Milroe was certainly the best football player on the field on Saturday night. There's no question about that. He was playing at a completely different speed than anybody else. And those are two rosters that are littered with guys that are going to play in the National Football League. And he was easily the best player there. His physicality and the speed he played at physically was completely different than a different speed than anybody else playing on the Georgia defense, certainly. And his processing was phenomenal as well. He did some really good things just to play quarterback in the game that was even faster than anybody was making decisions as well. So that was really fascinating to see how much he's developed since early of last season to where he is now. I thought that was, to me, it was a Heisman moment. You know, you got to continue to make those things happen throughout the year, but to me, that would shove him right into the top of the heap to be able to play the way he did against Georgia. And then I just thought the resilience of Georgia to hang in there. I thought that Mike Bobo had some very interesting moments from a play-calling standpoint, especially at the end of the first half. I thought they put themselves potentially in a chance to have a chance to get blown out of the game. The defense held on the rope a little bit at the end of the half to keep them in it. And then Beck decided, you know what, I'm just going to put my receivers up to bat. I'm going to go one-on-one and take shots down the field. And their guys stepped up and made plays, and it just shows you the heart of a champion as they fought back into the game to have a chance to win it. And then you get that 17-year-old, the brilliance of that 17-year-old wide receiver, Ryan Williams, was phenomenal. So it was an incredible game, no question.
Yeah, it was definitely unbelievable. I mean, the grittiness of Carson Beck on some of those fourth down conversions, like something I've never seen. I thought that was actually one of the stories of the game. Arch, I want to pivot to obviously Mercedes-Benz Stadium yesterday and talk about this Falcons team. And I do think there are questions obviously still out there about what this team is offensively, but let's focus on the good for just one second. I thought the offensive line played pretty well, all things considered. And I think the secondary for this Falcons team right now, probably the best unit on the field, the way they play in the back end. They're just incredible the way they're playing.
Mike, there's just so many untimely things that are happening to this team, whether it's a drop pass, whether it's a missed block potentially, whether it's a tight end or an offensive line misses a block, or Kirk just doesn't read it right and throws it to the wrong place. But those are the things that are kind of stunting what's going on offensively. But I would agree with you. I think that there's a lot of things that you like. I think there's even with the two guys that were starting with Neusel and Storm Norton starting at offensive center and right tackle, I thought you had some really good, pretty good continuity up front. I thought you got the ground game going, certainly when Tyler Algier got in the game. I thought they did a really pretty good job of protecting Kirk, giving him an opportunity to get through his progressions and go from one to two to three. And I think that there's a developing chemistry that's starting to happen. I talked a little bit about it, Kirk, and I think you guys played the interview I had with Kirk after the game that he's got going on with Mooney and with London and with Ray McLeod. Now, you'd like to see it develop even further with Kyle Pitts, but I just see there's a trust thing there that's developing, that he's getting the ball out on time. Those guys are making some plays for him. They're not making enough of those plays, but certainly those are things that I think you hang your hat on. The defensive side of the ball, you got to find a way to get off the field on third down. Their first down defense is interesting because they're giving up a lot of yardage on first down, and teams are staying in a very manageable situations, but they're just kind of bending, and they're not really breaking down. And then at some point, somebody makes a play. And the back end, you talk about a group that I thought there was a couple of moments during the game where they didn't tackle very well. But I thought in the second half, they tackled extremely well. And Mike Hughes is unbelievable at the corner. He's not a very big guy, but the dude can tackle. You know, A.J. Terrell's going to come up and try to hit you, and those two safeties are pretty solid as well. And of course, Troy Anderson had a monster day. 16 tackles, interception return for a touchdown. That's his best game as a football, as an NFL player, and you just hope that that's the tip of the iceberg for him.
Arch, I just want to follow up real quick, too, and a lot of conversation about Tyler Allgeier. You mentioned the physicality. I think the splits right now have kind of been 70-30, 75-25. What is the right amount of splits in terms of carries for both these running backs? Because I both think they're dynamic in their own right, but I think Allgeier brings a little bit of physicality.
Well, I think that, Mike, it's one of those deals where you got two really good players that you almost have to ride the hot hand, don't you? I think that's one of those deals where I don't think you could predicate, okay, you know, Bijan's going to touch the ball 60% of the time and Tyler's going to get 40%. I think you're doing yourself a disservice. If you've got a guy, and they did it yesterday, Tyler got hot, and they were running the football downhill, and they were being physical, they kept him in the game. You know, and you got one of your best football players in Bijan Robinson, the most explosive players on your team, standing on the sidelines watching. But that's what the situation, you know, really kind of dictated. And so I think that's the way you got to ride it. I think you got to ride the hot hand.
What's going right with Tampa Bay? Certainly Baker's playing out of his mind.
Yeah, they're doing. He's the key to it. Obviously, they're doing a really good job because they're not doing a lot of great stuff on the defensive side of the field. They're not necessarily sacking the quarterback a ton or anything like that. When I look at some of the numbers, Rob, I think that Baker's not missing. He's doing a really good job of getting the ball down the field. They're not running the football with any significance. It's always a team. It's team. You kind of scratch your head. It's not an offensive line that likes to come off the ball or run the football. They're getting enough out of the running game to kind of mix it up. I just think that they're playing at a really efficient level. They're not making some of the mistakes Atlanta's making, where you're getting a critical penalty that takes a touchdown off the board, or you get a big completion on a first down and get hands to the face, or you rip a guy's helmet off and you get a 15-yard penalty that takes that play away. They're not doing those kind of things to themselves. They're possessing the ball at about 30, 31 minutes per game. You know, and that's where Atlanta's – you're going to get in trouble if you get a really good offensive unit. And they played some good teams so far, Rob, this season, but I don't know if they've played anybody dynamic on offense. And I know that's including Kansas City, and then it was this team this weekend. It was supposed to be pretty good offensively. I didn't see anything there that would just scare you to death. This might be the best offensive team from an efficiency standpoint and operation standpoint early in the year they've played.
Baker thrives in chaos, doesn't he, when the play breaks down?
Well, he does a good job of creating some things. I don't know that he's necessarily any better than anybody you've seen from a creation standpoint or moving in the pocket. I mean, nobody's better than Patrick Mahomes at keeping things alive. I think what Baker's developed into is a guy that has an understanding of when to take shots down the field. He's got a couple of guys that'll go get the rock for him, and he understands how to distribute the ball underneath. And that's the real question here is what does Atlanta stay with what they're doing defensively and know that they're going to lose the time of possession game. As long as the offense scoring, I guess you can do that. Or do you start to get more aggressive and get after people? Because those first down plays, that's at some point you got to figure that that's going to be a bit of a problem to be on the field 35 minutes on defense.
Well, let's talk about that. They ran for 100 yards in the first half yesterday. Now, you did a good job in the second half at limiting that, but why are teams able to run with such great success? I was very impressed with what we did in the offseason to make this defensive line better, but it doesn't feel like it showed up yet in the run game.
Well, the run game's about numbers, Bo, in my opinion, and you don't have the numbers to consistently stop the run game. You're playing too high safeties most of the game, so you're playing an umbrella coverage. And this weekend kind of dictated that because you didn't want Rashid Shaheed to get over the top or Chris Olave. They had come into the game making big plays down the field. Now, it wasn't just this game. That's kind of the way this defense is designed. You're playing cover four. You're playing some cover two. And so those two safeties are going to be off the ball 15, 18 yards off the ball. They can't really be involved in the run game unless you start trying to cheat a little bit. They're also playing five across the front. They're going to a bear look on the inside. They're playing five across the front. They've got two guys at that second level. And if Caden Ellis and Troy Anderson don't read things right and fit the run properly, then you're getting gashed in the run game. And I think there's still some development going on there.
Hey, I know you touched on the secondary, and I think I said it this morning that this defense is just basically said, we're going to give you to the 10-yard line, and then we're gonna clamp down. But I think the play that no one's talking about was D. Alford's play on Rashid Shaheed yesterday in the end zone on that fourth down play. And I know you talked to D. Alford after the game, and he kind of talked about what happened there.
Yeah, the communication that they've got going on, and it goes to what Mike's talking about too, is the development of the communication in the back end. You got a bunch of guys that are kind of learning to play together. You know, Mike Hughes played some corner last year, played some nickel last year. D's certainly been in that position for a while. Jesse was in the back end, but you got a new safety in Justin Simmons, and I think that those elements of being able to communicate with one another in real time, because you're talking about when a team breaks the huddle or is at the line of scrimmage, you've got a couple of seconds to kind of figure out, okay, we got a stack look here. Are we going to play this? We got them in man coverage. I'll take inside, you take outside. No, let's just lock it. That was the conversation that was going on, and that's what they decided to do, is just lock it, meaning they're going to take the guy they originally had in the look, and D does a really good job of staying in the hip pocket of Shaheed when he runs that little bench route in the end zone and is able to knock the ball away and get him off the field. So I just think there's a continued development there, but it gets restricted down there in the end zone, down near the end zone, and Rams have been really good in the red zone.
Troy Anderson, great to see him kind of come into his own yesterday. We know why he was drafted, that freakish athleticism for his size. His development got sidelined last year due to injury. What's the latest on him yesterday with that knee?
Saw him a little bit after the game, Rob. He seemed to be moving around okay. I mean, obviously it's going to be a scenario where they're going to have to look at him today and tomorrow. We'll find out, you know, the official report will come out on Wednesday. I don't know that I can give you a solid report. I just know that he was moving around okay. It wasn't like he was in a boot or didn't have a brace on his knee or anything like that post-game. So we just got to keep our fingers crossed that this doesn't sideline him for any time, because Nate Landman is not due to come back for a while. Mm-hmm. They're a little thin at the linebacker spot. You know, J.D. Bertrand is that next guy up, and I thought J.D. got fooled a little bit a couple of times when he was in the game. So you're going to lose some of the experience that, even though a young player like Troy Anderson, he's garnered some experience, so you lose a little bit there. So hopefully the big guy from Montana can be ready to roll.
All right, Arch, we appreciate you, my brother. Let's go get a win on Thursday.
Sir. Let's go.
Let's do it, baby. Let's go. Thanks, man.
All right. What you got, Squid?
Tom Brady in the broadcast yesterday revealed that there was a mystery team none of us knew about that almost snagged him when he was a free agent before he went to Tampa Bay.
Ooh, I know, but I won't say anything.
You pipe down.
Ooh, me too.
All next on the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
That's right. We had a big series with the Mets. Hurricane wipes it out. We win one game in it. Then you take two or three from the Royals, who are a playoff team. By the way,
ding,
Georgia, Alabama, and what became an instant classic, the Tale of Two Halves.
Might end up being the game of the year, honestly, college football.
Where you had nothing but stars either make their presence known or created. I thought Jalen Milroe made his presence known, that he was still that, you know, he's even better than he was last year. I think Ryan Williams probably said, hey, here I am. I am on the national scene. And he does an ode to the program with the eye black that says "kill everybody," which is
he also
an ode.
Did the Dirty Bird. So
he did.
That's right, he did.
And then you have Falcons Saints, which no matter how you, I think we've talked about it pretty. We've been pretty even keel about the victory, but the reality is you just beat your arch rival to take the series lead. And you did it in a huge division game. You knocked them. You handed them their second straight loss.
A vital division game yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday was vital.
You're going to have another division rival coming in Thursday. Oh, hey, we got a doubleheader today that decides the fate of the franchise that's been the best the last 5 years, has a world championship, huge expectations, and a season that basically – has been devastated by injuries, and a lot of fans that are going to get receipts if they win one of two today from me gave up on. And here you are, you can have a playoff game tomorrow night, and I think Wednesday. I'm not sure if they get a day off in between Tuesday and Wednesday, but essentially you've been playing playoff games with the Braves for the last 2 weeks, and the Falcons have one of the biggest division games that they'll have all year on Thursday night.
Yeah, I can't go without saying the three primetime games in a matter of 5 weeks for the Falcons is such a flip and reverse from what we played through last year, where every single game was on Sunday at 1 o'clock, side for the game in Arizona, which was 4 o'clock, but local time, 1 o'clock.
So. Yeah, I'll be doing Falcons flyover at 1 o'clock, yeah. 1 a.m.
Well, listen.
Can you do me a favor? Can you be quiet when you walk in? Because I'll be sleeping in my office.
I'm over in Abe's office, knocked out. Rob's like, boom! Door slams behind him. I'm like, what time is it? Oh, it's 2:30. Oh, my God. I still got 2 hours of sleep in here. So, yeah, be careful with that door.